Good afternoon. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. It's all so good to be back with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to this dance space. So, folks, have you ever considered the world is changing at an accelerated rate? Conflict and unrest often follow. How do we move through difficult times with kindness and skill? Words shared from today's featured guest, Denise Fujiwara. She'll be joining us for the next hour to discuss beauty, exploration, moving parts, and so much more. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here on CIUT. We're going to take a break and be right back with Denise Fujiwara. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Denise Fujiwara is based in Tacoronto, where she choreographs, dances, conducts dramaturgy, and teaches dance. 2023 marks her 45th year as a professional dance artist. Her solos and ensemble choreography have traveled to festivals all over the world, and she began her interesting career in childhood as a gymnast, where she competed internationally for the Canadian Rhythmic Gymnastics team. Now, upon completing an honors BFA in dance at York University, she became one of the founders of Toronto Independent Dance Enterprise. Here, she was instrumental in the creation of a diverse body of work for the now defunct but still notorious company that danced across Canada for 10 years. In 1991, Denise formed her own company, Fujiwara Dance Inventions, to house the development of her solo projects. It is my great pleasure to welcome Denise to Turnout Radio this afternoon. Welcome to the show, Denise. So wonderful to have you with me.
Oh, thank you, Nicole. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Well, thank you. How are you doing? It's been some time since we have seen each other. How is Denise doing?
Yeah, it's been about 3 years, and have to say this has been a really crazy 3 years. But seems to be still on my feet and still working.
Yes, yeah, it really has, hasn't it? I think whenever I ask folks, how are you doing? I think a lot of us are reflecting back, Denise, on the last few years, how it feels in our bodies and how it looks for us both backwards and moving forwards. And so different tends to be the word that comes up very often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it is disorienting because the world seems so different now than we expected it would become. Yes. And it's been so sudden and so stark in its changes in so many aspects of life that it is very disorienting.
Disorienting, I think is another very accurate word. I found, Denise, that much of this time in the past few years has been spent for me personally reflecting and thinking about what moving forward looks like. But I'm doing it with a little bit of a different lens as I explore, you know, yesteryear and also explore tomorrow. And I'm doing it with a different type of intention. Has any of that been your personal experience?
Yes. I'm finding I'm struggling because, you know, the pandemic hit us so suddenly. Projects that were mid-process and about to launch suddenly got cut. And of course, now the expectation is that those projects will continue. But, and some of them are, and some of them are wobbling, and some of them, we don't know. So there's that. And then the fact that the world is so different now, you know, I'm having to have little chats with myself about, you know, the idea of letting go of what I expected to be doing now and just be really open about what is possible and what is arising now in the moment, and to be open and available to that. And I know that if I can do that, when I can do that, that I am much happier, much more relaxed, and life becomes much more enjoyable. It's when I'm holding on to the past that it creates suffering.
Ah, yes. Yes, Denise. I really appreciate your share there, even regarding the conversations with self. Mm-hmm. I think yes. Yes, that's a lovely opportunity to check in and to do, I think, what you have shared there with regards to the letting go. There's something very key in that I think allows for a greater level of freedom.
Yes, exactly. Yes. We, you know, this is Zen wisdom. Buddhist wisdom is that attachment is the root of all suffering, and we're advised not to attach as much as possible, you know, to be open to what is now.
Beautifully said. I wonder sometimes how easy that is to achieve, the letting go.
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. It's difficult, you know, given this large and crazy situation that we find ourselves in globally, as much as it is a difficult situation to reckon with individually in the moment.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I hold a lot of hope. A lot of hope moving forward. You know, as I look around and I look around at our global climate and I think about the conversations that are being had, I'm holding hope.
Yes.
Yes.
I am too.
Well, you have opened up this interview so beautifully. And, you know, I'm looking so forward to chatting with you today. I know that on the broadcast, we're going to be discussing your work entitled Moving Parts. But before we enter that lane, I'm so curious, Denise, your body of work over the years has been so wonderfully vast and has also explored many different conversations. What global dialogues is your work most influenced by?
Ah, well, that's a great question. I grew up with a very conventional Eurocentric dance training. You know, my mother found a good ballet school for me to join, and so I learned ballet, and then of course then my training went into gymnastics in a very serious way. And then I went to York University, which was, you know, which also at that time had a very Eurocentric perspective in the dance training. So I learned contemporary dance. And then after university, I became very involved and intrigued with improvisation. And the kind of improvisation I was first introduced to is American postmodern work, you know, the Judson Group, contact improvisation, those kinds of practices.
Right.
And I found those very creative and very freeing. But then in my 30s, I was interested in Butoh, which is a form of contemporary dance theater from Japan. But in my early 30s, I saw a choreographer named Natsu Nakajima, and I thought her work was brilliant and meaningful and masterful. And I decided who I wanted to learn about dance from. And at that point, you know, I could see that if I was able to work with her, that she could take me to the next level.
Yes.
And I contacted her, and she refused. She refused me.
Ah.
Yeah, she said that she was too busy. She was touring, and she was rarely at home to, you know, to teach, and that she couldn't and wasn't interested. And who was I, anyways? So I just kept, you know, following her. Whenever she came to Canada, I would do workshops, and she never seemed to remember me. But then, as luck would have it, 9 years later, she agreed to work with me, and she agreed to set a solo on me. And that is thanks to Elizabeth Langley from Montreal, who was at that point the chair of the dance department at Concordia University. So thanks to her, I was able to finally work with Natsu. It took 9 years, but it was worth the wait. And so she really immersed me in Butoh, and I learned from, you know, a master what Butoh is. And
yes,
that was a wonderful experience. And it is such a different paradigm from the dance training I had had before. All of the principles seem to be exactly opposite to the principles of Western dance forms, that I really had to give everything up in a way. I had to divest myself of any notion that I was an experienced dancer, and I really had to start over again. It was very humbling. It was very disturbing in many ways to me, but it was also so refreshing to start over. And at that point, I was 39, and I was starting over.
Right.
And what that allowed me to do, though, by really just letting go of my past ideas about dance and my my identity, you know, as an experienced dancer, was that it allowed me to learn very quickly, relatively quickly, I would say. It allowed me to absorb what she was teaching me and the principles that I now had to learn how to embody more quickly, or perhaps I would not have been able to embody those new ideas if I hadn't given up what I thought I knew.
Yes, indeed. And can you explore, Denise, for us a little bit more about what some of the practices are that are involved in Butoh?
Well, for example, very very central to the whole idea of Dancing Bhutto is the idea of no self. This is a Zen idea, but it's also fundamental. Well, actually, all of the performing arts, all of the arts really in Japan have a Zen foundation to them. So for a Japanese artist, this is not at all unusual, but one of the principles is, for example, the idea of no self. Right. And, you know, actually, Natsu made me have to give up my idea of self in order to, you know, transform into this work. And that was one of them. Ideas about space-time are very different. You know, we, in Japanese performing arts, time is not linear. Time is completely integrated with space, and we work with time as something that's elastic, and in a way the dance plays with the manipulation of space-time. And this was not something that I had been introduced to before in Western dance forms. It was, you know, when I realized I would have to understand, and there's a term for it, it's called ma in Japanese, and ma has no literal, no easy translation into English. But yeah. Once I realized that I would have to learn how to embody this idea of space-time, I, you know, went to U of T and I spoke to the professor who teaches No in Kabuki theater, and he gave me a pretty textbook definition that didn't help. So I really had to slog through and figure it out myself. And eventually, you know, in a way I had a kind of a bit of a kensho, we could say in Zen, but a bit of an awakening into this concept of space-time. Yeah. And eventually I was able to realize it, manifest it for, you know, a minute, 30 seconds. And then eventually it was something that I could do for the whole piece or, you know, the entire rehearsal. But yeah. It was kind of crazy.
And I'm so curious, did the embodiment of Bhutto, in what ways did it potentially impact your approach to your creative practice?
Well, I think I had to really just give up my old ideas about dance and choreography. And I had to start over. And in a way, it's complex, but I think I had to start looking at the larger picture of choreography and or of an idea, and then figure out how to find the details of it.
in 1997, you had co-founded Can Asian Dance, an organization which supports choreographers in the creation of dance through the commissioning, presentation, and promotion of live performance inspired by Asian ideas, and the cultivation of intercultural and intergenerational knowledge exchange. Can you share with us, Denise, how your work with Can Asian Dance informed the work that you investigate and explore at Fujiwara Dance Inventions?
I was a co-founder of Can Asian, and I was involved in its direction and artistic direction for 25 years. And last year, I just retired from that. I stepped away. And so now, of course, Can Asian will have a new artistic vision and a new... So what I'm going to tell you is sort of what my take was it when I was working there. And what I was interested in doing with Can Asian is of course related to what I believe in and was interested in my own work. And that is the importance of supporting the choreographer to develop a distinct perspective on their choreography and to support them to realize it. And that sounds very simple, but it's actually a very difficult thing to do. You know, you see everybody trying to articulate what they're trying to do and put it into a grant application so that they can get money. And then if they do get money, we then have to actually realize the content of what we had proposed. And I must say that I think that I see a lot of choreographers who get nervous about that, and then they make a dance about dancing well.
Right.
And the program says all of the good things that the work is about in terms of content, but very seldom do I see the work actually realize those ideas in a complex way. And you know, the details in with detail and specificity. And more often I see a lot of dances that are about dancing well. So with Can Asian, what I tried to do was push choreographers to really be specific about what they were wanted to realize in their choreography, and then support them to actually realize it, not to back down, but to keep going. And you know, even if it means starting over again and again to make their choreography live up to what their initial inspiration was, or you know, their evolving inspiration was turning out to be.
Yes. Yes. And when I hear you talk about the embodiment of starting again or starting over,
yes.
I think very deeply about what that can reveal for an artist as they begin again, as they start again, where that can potentially take a human being as they explore self. And explore self within time and space.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because you know, the self can put obstacles up in front of what you're trying to do as an artist. It's very humbling to be an artist, and you have to be prepared to be humbled, you know, to try an idea and fail at an idea and try again. And there are a few dances that I've, well, many dances actually that I've started, I've done a version of, and then I've trashed the whole thing, you know, or I've trashed a good part of it and kept the good stuff, and then started again from those little nuggets that seem to have potency and build from there. It takes a lot of, you know, that phrase, you have to be prepared to kill your babies. That's what it can feel like. But in the end, if you can let go of the ideas that are middling and work from the really potent ideas, you're going to have a better work. We have to give away that, we have to, you know, give up that preciousness.
Right. There's something about clarity that comes to mind for me when I hear you talk about that. A new clarity of mind that can potentially happen when there is a starting again.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wow. Well, folks, if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and I am absolutely delighted to be sitting down with Denise Fujiwara. And Denise, let's talk about moving parts.
Yes, the latest work.
Yes, let's talk about it. You know, your contemporary work, Moving Parts, will of course be presented by Dusk Dances and Dance Works as part of the upcoming 2023 Dusk Dances Summer Festival. And the work is said to be a testament, Denise, to the power of dance to move, inspire, and transform. And so I'd love to know, what questions does the Moving Parts specifically investigate?
Well, it asks how are we to deal with living in a world that is changing so quickly? And, you know, in a world where people are, we all find change difficult. That's natural. And what I'm seeing in the world, what inspired this work was, it actually got inspired in 2016 when Donald Trump got elected. And you know, what alarmed me was the increasing polarization that I was seeing in people. And I wondered how one could maneuver through life in that kind of environment. And what is it that makes us become polarized and reactive rather than being reflective and skillful with all of these changes and difficulties that we find ourselves in?
Right.
And so the question was, how do I investigate those ideas in a dance? And yes. And so this started in 2016, and I thought the piece would be finished, but then, and I did begin to make it. I made it in parts. I did an excerpt in 2017 for Dance Works, and then another different excerpt in 2019 for Dusk Dances. And then the pandemic happened. It was supposed to premiere at Dance Works in, I think, 2020. But the pandemic made it impossible. And so now, you know, many years after its inception, its inspiration, it is now finally getting premiered. And in the, you know, when I realized it was going to take a long time to get this piece finished, I thought, and I also work slowly anyways, but I thought, oh, by the time I finish this, my the thesis will be irrelevant, because people will figure out, you know, how the politics will change, somebody different will be the president of the US, people will calm down, and there won't be this polarization that I'm seeing now. But instead, it's worse. So yeah.
And so the conversation, of course, continues to be relevant. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And so what context in particular does the work explore about the beauty and the complexity of the human body?
Well, in a way, I started at this very basic place, which is that, you know, when the world is tumultuous, we tend to respond with fight, flight, reactivity. But if we're to, you know, find a way to live in peace and to find happiness, we have to find other ways to respond to life. And so that was the question, is like, how do you respond instead of react to your environment? And the answer to that is, in fact, complexity itself. You know, in order to react to a situation is the simplest thing, because we do it without thinking, and what happens happens. And what happens is often regrettable. So in how do we become somebody who, instead of reacting, responds to a situation? Well, that takes skillfulness. It takes practice, because it's natural to react. We have to learn how to take that breath, that moment, to be reflective and to use our wisdom instead of just letting go with, you know, what's in us in the moment.
And
it's a complex thing. It's a difficult thing to do. And in fact, you know, everybody has to train themselves to do that. Because we're all born, you know, and in spite of all the progress and the depth of information that we have about psychology and politics and the way the world works, the way human beings interact, in spite of all of the information that we have about that and the depth of psychology and political science and stuff, every individual has to, you know, starts from zero and has to learn it through their childhood and through their adolescence and into adulthood, how to respond to what life throws at you.
Yes. Yes. This as well, very intriguing, Denise, because I'm thinking about the conditioning that can sometimes be involved as we are born and raised, the conditioning that can sometimes be involved, not just, I'm not necessarily speaking about at home, but from, you know, societal frameworks that can sometimes teach us that reacting is the fastest, the easiest, and the best way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, again, I come back to this word, there's a beauty in the word response that that you shared. Because I think that in responding and doing so perhaps with mindfulness and the degrees, the other wonderful degrees that you've shared, allows for more peace, I think, among us, but also I think a deeper connection potentially for us as community.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and, you know, on an individual basis, it's difficult enough. But how, you know, for a community to be a community, a healthy community, and to for there to be functionality in a community, yes, we have to engage in this very complex dance of responding skillfully to each other.
Yes. Yes.
And creatively, responding creatively to situations that, you know, don't have easy answers or easy ways of working themselves out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Were there any discoveries that you picked up on as you were moving through moving parts? Was there anything new, interesting that you had discovered?
I discovered that, you know, I had to walk carefully through this work, because I'm working, you know, I worked with groups of dancers in the creation of it. And I was asking them to push each other around, you know, and shove each other. And because that's something that is part of our realities. It may not be physical. It may or may not be physical. But right. It happens to us, you know, at the grocery store, in a sense, you know, somebody, you ask for something and somebody sort of is terse with you, or you have, you know, disagreements with people that you work with, in a way that's kind of a, there's a kind of pushing and shoving that we do to each other in our everyday experiences. And here, because we're in dance, you know, I was asking people actually literally push and shove each other. And in order to do that, we had to take care, and we had to learn how to do it responsibly. And it also made us face up to the idea of being pushed and
right.
investigate how we individually respond to that. And in doing that, I think everyone got really much more resilient, because we got used to getting pushed around and learned different ways to respond to it, a myriad ways of responding to it, you know, to that idea and to that physicality. And of course, that's just one example of a kind of exercise that we did that eventually evolved into choreography in various parts of the piece. But yeah, that was one of the reflections. And the other thing is that the, you know, as we worked with the complexity of human relations in the work, we actually got happier and more playful and more creative. And in the end, the piece is a very uplifting work. The group seems to be really happy because we also manifest the work through singing, and singing in three-part harmony with a choir. And if you've ever sung in a choir, you know that that is an uplifting experience.
Yes, it is. It is indeed. It is. And I have sung in multiple choirs. Yeah, there's a melodic, there's this melodic and wonderful opportunity, I think, to create in a very different space when you're bringing your voices together.
Mm-hmm.
And to unite in a different space as well.
Yes. And to unite on a vibrational level.
Yes.
Yeah, with your whole body.
Yes.
Anyways, that's part of the experience. But also, you know, just getting used to how we can interact in ways that we tend to shy away from, by confronting, interacting in ways that we usually shy away from, and learning skill about in doing that, we actually, I think, have become a really tight group and actually a pretty cheerful group. So I'm really grateful for that.
Yes. Yes. What a wonderful opportunity to do all of those things. And I'm curious, what were some of the conversations that happened within that space of creating and being and exploring that activated the artists to think about the questions that the work asks, or some of the conversations that took place?
Well, you know, actually most of what we did was physical, and then we would reflect on, you know, our responses to the work. Actually, we didn't verbally reflect as much as we accepted and figured it out in our bodies.
Right.
And I could see the dancers, you know, at first the work, you know, some of the work was hard or harsh. And then it would, the dimensions of it would expand and it would become much more, and then they became very creative with it, and then they became very playful with it. So we didn't talk as much as we actually expanded our physical practices.
Ah, right. Yeah, this is, I always find it very interesting. Sometimes I wish that I could just transport into the space where these creations are happening so that I can see firsthand the profound beauty of what's taking place. And you've shared it so wonderfully today. What is your hope for those who are convening, those who are coming together to experience this conversation? What is your hope?
Well, I hope you'll come to see the show, everyone out there in Radioland. It's actually opened now. It opened yesterday. Yesterday was the first evening. So I hope people will come out and experience the work vibrationally. We found that people are many people do find it moving, and people spontaneously sing in the work, and occasionally we ask you to sing in the work, and whoever wants to can, and it's people find it moving. I think, to be sitting amidst people who are responding to the work, not only with their hearts but their voices, is pretty interesting.
Yes, wonderfully shared. Well, Denise, I have enjoyed speaking with you today.
I've enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. What a pleasure to sit down with you today. I want to thank you for joining me on Turnout Radio. And hey, we can't wait to see and experience moving parts. Thank you again, Denise. So lovely to have you here today.
Thank you, Nicole.
Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. Well, we have come to the close of our hour. My thanks to Denise Fujiwara for joining me on the broadcast. What a pleasure it was to have her on the show. And folks, the premiere of the full-length work, Moving Parts by Denise, is on now as part of the annual Summer Festival, Dusk Dances 2023, which occurs at Withrow Park from July 30th straight through to August 6th. You can learn more by visiting danceworks.ca. Thank you for tuning in today and for joining us for today's broadcast. And listen, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us online at turnoutradio.com, where you can find our past interviews and dance news, and connect with us at turnoutradio@ciut.fm. Join us again next week for more of the broadcast right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance.
We'll be right back.